You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. And according to the Wisconsin Policy Forum's most recent numbers, the median home price in our state has increased by more than 50% over just 5 years. Experian Automotive says the average car payment has risen to almost $530 a month. Add to that higher interest rates, looming student loan repayments, and maybe some child care if you can't afford it, and it's not hard to understand why some semblance of financial security seems so unattainable, especially if you are a millennial between the ages of 28 and 43. So how do you begin building up that nest egg while still being able to afford the cost of living? Join our conversation this hour at 1-800-642-1234 with your experiences or questions for our guest. 800-642-1234. Emails available anytime. Ideas at WPR.org. Grant Sabatier is the creator of the financial advice website Millennial Money, a podcaster, author of the 2019 book Financial Freedom, A Proven Path to All the Money You Will Ever Need, and co-founder and CEO of BankBonus.com. Grant, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Glad to be back.
So in 2010, you've got just a handful of dollars to your name, literally handful of dollars in your bank account. By 5 years later, you're 30 years old and you've saved $1.25 million. Can you give us an idea of what those 5 years were like for you, Grant?
Yeah, it was certainly an intense period. My mid-20s to my early 30s, money was pretty much all I thought about. It was my singular goal. And this was all precipitated because when I was 24, I was completely broke and had to move back home with my parents. And so didn't want to stay there long. Had never really thought much about money before, but it was around this time that, you know, I put on my philosophy major hat and thought, you know, very strategically, what is money? Why is everyone so stressed about it? And most importantly, how can I go out and make more? So it was my sole focus during that 5 year period. I had a full-time job for 1 year and then I became an entrepreneur. And that entire period, I was saving about 82% of my income and investing it and living as frugally as I could.
More than 80% of what you made, you were able to sock away. That's an incredible amount of savings. Where did that savings come from? Where did you scrimp?
Pretty much everywhere. So, you know, I didn't have any kids yet. I wasn't married yet. And so I moved from a relatively expensive apartment. I had an $1,800 a month apartment, and I moved to an $800 a month apartment with a roommate. And then I needed a car, so I bought a $700 Nissan Maxima off of Craigslist, and it was the cheapest, most reliable car that I could find. And so when you reduce your housing expense and your transportation expense, really the biggest other category is food. And so I started cooking myself instead of eating out and started minimizing just the amount of time that I spent out, you know, going out with friends, or when I did go out, I just tried to not spend a lot of money. And so just reducing those three big categories to as little as possible, I was able to sock away a lot of extra money, especially with it being my focus.
Yeah, Grant, while I was learning about your story, I was curious. I wanted to know from you, like, what did you drink for 5 years? Was it just water?
Oh, no. I mean, this is the thing. A lot of people think that I just lived in a cardboard box.
Right.
But when you're really mindful about, you know, your spending and your relationship to money, and for me, I started to recognize that every dollar that I was saving and investing would be worth upwards of $10 or $20, you know, down the road in the future. And so I started viewing saving really as an opportunity instead of a sacrifice. And I lived like normal people. You know, I had, you know, glasses of wine, and I didn't drink soda, but, you know, pretty much coffee, wine, and water, you know, kept me going.
When you look back at those years, socking away more than 80% of what you were making, is there anything you look back on now and say, I wish I had done this a little bit differently?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm certainly an extreme example. And this is, you know, I cover a lot of this in the book. I'm really an outlier where, you know, I spent 98% of my, you know, waking hours and mental thought process trying to learn everything that I could about money, and, you know, realized that a lot of it out there was, you know, either a scam or designed to kind of take your money. And so once I reframed my relationship, the biggest challenge was choosing to live my life differently than my friends and the people around me. So I remember picking my mom up at Chicago O'Hare Airport, and she made fun of my car the entire way driving downtown. And my girlfriend, who's now my wife, also, you know, made fun of some of my, you know, frugality habits. And so the most challenging thing was just living a little bit differently than everyone else. I do think I was a little bit intense, and looking back on it, I probably could have, you know, laid off the gas pedal a little bit and still reached financial independence in 7 to 10 years. But, you know, I was happy while I was doing it. And, you know, seeing my net worth grow, seeing the amount of freedom that I had, the more options that I was acquiring, you know, that really motivated me and it made me feel kind of unique. And it's always nice to kind of go against the grain and the status quo and figure something out that previously I thought I couldn't figure out. And, you know, a lot of my friends and my parents and everyone around me was stressed about money. And I started to, once I'd saved and invested, started to be less and less stressed about money. And that really freed me up to think about other things and also invest my time in other ways.
What are the economic conditions today that you see, Grant, that would encourage people to work towards an early retirement?
Yeah, so we're certainly living in a much more difficult climate than when I started my financial independence journey in 2010. But on the flip side, I think it's really never been easier to make money on your own terms. There's so many different ways. You know, when I started side hustling, you know, there wasn't Uber. You couldn't, you know, work for and deliver for Instacart. You couldn't create digital products online. You know, it was a much more restricted environment. And so I'm very bullish, actually, on people's ability to make money. And just in the position that I'm in, I get so much outreach from people really all over the world who are just finding creative ways to become entrepreneurs, start side businesses, and really increase that other side of the coin. I mean, you can really only cut back so much, but you know, your income, there's a lot of ways to make additional money now. And if you use that money and invest it as opposed to just spending it, you know, I'm still very bullish on the American economy, the American investor, and entrepreneurs generally.
Right now on your website, you have 23 plus best money-making apps of 2024. You're telling me I can make money just through an app?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so many ways that, I mean, you can make money doing anything. You can review Amazon products. You can, one of the biggest things right now is just being, you know, a freelance editor. Because of the digital economy, there's just so much demand for being a proofreader, being a freelance editor, if you're detail-oriented. I mean, there are people, you know, moms, people who have no experience in this, but, you know, they're detail oriented and, you know, they're able to make $20, $30 an hour.
Whoa.
Just on their free time, you know, with some of these side businesses. So it's the digital economy has really opened all of this up and it requires so many supporting roles. I know people who have no bookkeeping experience and they're able to, within a year, launch a bookkeeping business, you know, making $5,000 a month and then able to grow that business. And so there's just a ton of demand for these really kind of digital economy support services that didn't exist before.
Yeah, and that's not indifferent to your story, Grant, where it took, I mean, what you started out with knowing very little about Google Ads and the a digital ad universe, and through YouTube, you were able to train yourself into becoming what you are today, a financial advice website, millennial money podcaster, and author of Financial Freedom, a proven path to all the money you will ever need. Grant Sabatier, our guest. We're taking a look at how to get ahead financially and what you need to do to save and what you need to do to earn and what you can do to invest. And we take your questions and comments along the way at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're looking at ways to save money, opportunities for making money, and the best investments you can make to create some financial security for your family, especially if you're a millennial between the ages of 28 and 43. Grant Sabatier is the creator of the financial advice website Millennial Money, a podcaster, and his book, Financial Freedom, A Proven Path to All the Money You Will Ever Need. And you're invited to our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Your questions and comments are welcome here at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. So, Grant, these side hustles, the best money-making apps you have on your website right now and your suggestions, you see these gig economy jobs outside of apps, for example, Uber or DoorDash. Do you support these? Are these part of our financial security?
Well, they're certainly good places to start.
Okay.
So it can be difficult to just jump into full-time entrepreneurship, but any time that you are trading your time for money, you're going to be limited by the amount of money that you can make. So we see this in a lot of markets. Uber is a great place to make, $500 to $1,000 in additional income, but you're only making money when you're out there in your car driving. And so it's a good place to start making a little additional money, but I typically recommend that you invest your time and build your skills to create a side hustle where you don't have to trade your time for money. So a good example is if you want to be a dog walker, you can create a little dog walking business, create, walk dogs in your neighborhood. But over time, what you really want to do is be the connector between supply and demand. So you don't want to be the driver for Uber, you want to be Uber. Because Uber doesn't own any of the cars. They connect people who need rides with people who want to give rides. And you can do the same thing pretty much in any industry. And the dog walking example, if you create your own dog walking business and you hire people to do the dog walks, and then you're just connecting people who need dog walkers with people who are willing to walk dogs, that's where you really unlock the income potential. You become basically a business owner as opposed to someone just trading your time for money. So I always encourage people, learn the skill set just like I did. I learned how to build websites from YouTube. It's very easy to learn these skills, especially digital economy skills, and then start offering them, get some clients, get some good testimonials, and then focus all of your energy on going out and trying to get more clients and finding someone to deliver the services, because that's really where you build a business and that's really how businesses work.
If you go to our guest website right now, millennialmoney.com, you will find a simple truth, as it says, money is infinite, but time is not. Rather interesting take on financial advice and building a financial nest egg, Grant.
Yeah, I mean, this was the huge revelation for me when I was 24, that any time that you're working and getting paid for that, you're trading your time, which you can't get back for money, which you can always go out and make more of. And so once I started thinking about that, it really changed my mindset. And I thought, okay, how can I go out and make as much money as I can for my time and then really try to protect my time as much as possible? Because at the end of the day, we only have so much time. And so a good example, if you're, making money, if you invest that money, then that money that you've invested starts making money for you, and you didn't have to trade any of that time for the money that your 401k made for you, for example. And so across all areas of your financial life, if you can maximize the amount of money that you're making without having to trade your time, whether it's through investing, whether it's through having a business, ultimately that gets you a lot more freedom. And every dollar that you invest is actually future freedom. It's not just money, because in the future, it's going to be bigger and you're just going to have more options than you did today.
We're talking about saving and investing for early retirement with Grant Sabatier, founder and owner of the personal finance website Millennial Money, where money is infinite, but time is not. We go to your questions and comments next at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jack and Madison, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah, so I was just thinking, I wonder what Grant's thoughts were on financial independence, retire early, aka FIRE, because it seems like a lot of what he's doing ties into that. And I've been trying to follow the FIRE philosophy myself, saving, 60 to 80% of my income, investing in index funds and doing other things like that to get ahead in the economy. As much as I'd like to start my own business or whatnot, even a side hustle like this, but I was just curious to see what he thought of FIRE and how that ties into his thinking and his approach to money and getting ahead in the economy like this.
Jack, before I turn to Grant here, I want to ask you, do you feel the pinch when it comes to saving as much as 60 to 80% of your income? Does it hurt your lifestyle? Have you been able to accommodate it? What's it feel like?
I'm really glad you raised the question. I feel like it's not that much of a pinch. I mean, there are moments when I wish I could go out to eat a little more or I could do other fun things. I try to do fun with stuff on the side. I love going to concerts. And
right.
So,
right.
Maybe once a month or so I'll go to a concert, but I try not to push it that much, though.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jack. And Grant, we've got about a minute before the news, but we'll continue on this conversation about the FIRE movement, because as I understand it, as Jack mentioned, you are a proponent of this this FIRE movement, which stands for
Financial Independence, Retire Early.
You all for it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this really was pretty pivotal to my own journey. Vicki Robin, who really is the godmother of the FIRE movement, wrote the foreword to my book. She's a dear friend of mine. And, I agree with Jack that, it really doesn't feel like a sacrifice as long as you've built a mindful relationship with money and that's something that you're focused on. And so, like anything in life, you should be spending money to maximize your happiness per dollar. So spend money on those things that bring you joy, and the other stuff just save for future freedoms and the you that you've yet to become. So huge believer in it. It's really a choose your own adventure. I think it gets misportrayed in the media as being all about deprivation and sacrifice. But at the end of the day, it's really about building a life that you love. And we can control so little in our life, but our relationship to money and what we do with it and the freedom that it acquires for us really is one thing that we can control. And so I'm all about the FIRE movement and choosing your own path in life.
Financial independence, retire early. Grant Sabatier, creator of the financial advice website Millennial Money, a podcaster and author of Financial Freedom, continues our conversation. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about challenges millennials face in building a financial safety net, while also pursuing the best paths towards saving more, making more, and investing more. We welcome you to our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, and we'll get back to your calls in a moment. Our guest, Grant Sabatier, the creator of the financial advice website Millennial Money, podcaster and author of Financial Freedom, A Proven Path to All the Money You Will Ever Need. And Grant, when it comes to millennials, how do they begin setting a goal for how much money they'll need before they even go about attaining it? How do you figure out that number?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because it's incredibly difficult for humans to predict the future, and especially how much money we're going to need in the future. But the best place to start is based on how much money that you're spending today. So typically it's recommended that you save, 3 to 6 months of your current expenses in a high yield savings account. That's your emergency fund that you can get to anytime if you have an emergency. After you've done that, you should be investing really for the long term, which is 5, 10, 20 plus years. And that should be in tax-advantaged accounts like 401ks and IRAs. And really, you should try to invest early, often, and as much as you can, because so much of investing is about time in the market as opposed to timing the market. So right now, the stock market is at an all-time high as we record this. But really, if you zoom out and really fast forward to 20 years from now, it's going to be comparatively very low. And so you should really try to invest as much as you can. And then along the way, get more specific about how much money do you actually need. It doesn't take that much time, but maybe the next 90 days, look at the money that you're spending, go through your credit card statement, look at everything you bought, and just ask yourself, was this worth it? Did this bring me the amount of happiness that I thought it would? And over time, just asking simple questions like that, you're going to recognize that you're spending money on the things that make your life better, and then cutting back on the things that don't make your life better. And then just try to save as much as you can. And as you get closer to retirement, as your money grows, continue to revisit those types of questions, because who you are today is going to be very, very different than who you're going to be 5, 10, 20 years from now. And so the financial industry always tries to sell you on a level of precision that's unrealistic, because we don't know who we're going to be in the future.
So you've sort of taken a common investment, buy low, sell high, and changed that to buy now and sell much, much, much later.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really, it's about getting your money to work for you as long as possible. And, so much of the traditional advice, especially that my parents got and that's still pretty popular today is, save 5 to 10% of your income. But that's just really a simple math problem. And when the average person saves 5 to 10% of their income, they're either never going to be able to retire because their money's not going to grow enough, or they're just going to have a lot less than they really need. And so if you can save 10 to 20%, 20 to 30%, just adding a little bit extra significantly reduces the amount of time that you actually have to work in the future.
Grant Sabatier, our guest, website Millennial Money, and your questions and comments now at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Eugene in Viola, good morning.
Good morning. I live on about $15,000 in a year's time.
Whoa.
How? I get by just fine, and I save money. Last fall, I spent 2 weeks in Hawaii, By the time I got done, including my plane ticket, I spent about $1,200.
You should be a guest.
I bought a Ford pickup, a Ford Ranger, from a private party. The bank put up, I put up $500. The bank put up $4,500. My payments come out to $150 a month. I pay $220. Then I got to saving pennies, copper pennies. Those are worth 2 to 3 cents a piece, pretty much. And I take envelopes, and I put money into those envelopes what I've got to pay each month. I keep track of what I spend. And I raise my own garden. I get along just fine. And I've generally got money to spend when I want it.
Wow. Hey, Eugene, you sound like you were one of the original of the FIRE movement, financial independence, retire early. Are you still, what do you do for income these days?
Well, during the summer months, I run that shoe shine. I'll be going back on the road again this summer with that shoe shine stand, and I'm 85 years old.
Wow, so a long way from being a millennial. Where can we find Eugene's shoe shine stand this summer?
I will be, my first event, I will be in Nakusa in June for an old-fashioned day. One summer, I did 12 events, and I did 12 or 13 events, and I took in just about $2,000, and I only charged $3 or $4 for a shoe shine. Charge $4, and most of the time, you'll get $5.
Eugene will be looking for you this summer, and thanks for sharing your financial story with us this morning. Grant, it makes me think of how, when you tell the story of your 5 years to financial independence and how you got to 30 with over $1 million in your bank account but started with really literally next to nothing, you talk about how that first year is the only year you actually had a job while you were building up that money, or at least you were working for wages with a full-time employment. How important is entrepreneurship to the big picture of financial independence, especially the younger you are?
It's certainly not essential, but
okay.
Whenever you can be your own boss and control the money that you're making, you're likely always going to be able to make more. I mean, we see this today. A lot of people think that W-2 jobs are less risky than entrepreneurship, but you know, just look over the past, 6 to 12 months, there's been over 300,000 layoffs at these companies that people never thought they'd be laid off from, the Amazon, the Googles, the Metas of the world. And I think what you're seeing with certainly the growth of AI and just the rapid changes in our economy, if you're doing a physical type job, right, it's like you can't replace a daycare worker with a robot. But if you're in the knowledge economy, I think there's a lot of worry, and full-time jobs are not nearly as secure, most W-2 jobs, as they have been. And so entrepreneurship, on the flip side, most studies show that entrepreneurs are actually a lot happier than full-time workers, even though there's a little bit of stress in managing your own income. Just your ability to control your own time, your own future, your own potential tends to make entrepreneurs happier. And so for me, I had the W-2 job saved as much as I could, but realized there was really a limit, just because I could negotiate for raises, but my salary was really capped based on what my employer was willing to pay me. And so once I went out and started, building my own businesses, obviously there was no limit to that. And I just had a lot more money to save and a lot more control of my time and really a lot more control of my destiny.
So do you see a path to be able to work your way to financial independence and just go along with the 401k that is part of your benefits package? If you just go that route and that route alone, is there a path to financial independence these days?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Okay.
So it's still certainly possible. There's just a limit to, certainly how much you can save and how much you can cut back. So yeah, I hear from teachers all the time who are retiring in their, mid to late 40s, and they've been saving diligently for the past 20 years. What really matters is the next 5 years of your financial life. And so what you want to do is the next 5 years, if you can cut back, if you can make more money, if you can increase the amount that you're investing, the benefit of the next 5 years, no matter how much money you're making, really is going to set you up for the future. And so this isn't something like you have to do for next 10 or 20 years. What you do in the interim really matters the most.
Eugene also brought up another aspect that is part of your Millennial Money website, and that is what is to do in times of need. When you need to borrow some money, it sounded like Eugene got a great deal with his bank and his pickup truck. But if I'm a millennial and I'm looking to save as much as I can, but I need to borrow something to get by, what am I looking for, Grant?
Yeah, I mean, this is an absolutely terrible time to borrow money for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the real challenge here, is that housing has never been more expensive. Interest rates haven't been this high in so long. which makes buying a new car a lot more expensive. And so what you want to do is really try to minimize those large purchases right now. It's actually a really terrible time to buy a house. It's across the country, on average, about 38% cheaper just to rent. And so keep renting. Don't take out that loan. I would try to minimize the amount of debt that you take on today as much as possible and wait ultimately for interest rates to come down and make those larger purchases. So I don't recommend taking a loan for anything. If you have to, you know, I liked the advice just going to really your local bank. You know, we often think that, you know, it's going to the large banks is going to get us the best deal. But right now, credit unions are where it's at. So credit unions have been growing, you know, pretty rapidly in terms of their membership. And if you stay in your local community, they're often willing to invest in your local community. So go to your local credit union, your local or regional bank, talk to them about what you need to, you know, get a car loan or a mortgage as opposed to going to, you know, some of the bigger players in the market.
What about the money I already borrowed? For millennials making their way out of a college education, many of them find themselves burdened with a debt that their wages aren't going to cover in the near future. What about the money that you've already borrowed and already take with you when you start this financial trip?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this really comes down to just a simple math problem, which is you should be paying off your highest interest debt first. Mm-hmm. So if you have credit card interest debt, you know, typically the APR is going to be, you know, 25 to 30%. You want to pay that down because that's really like getting a guaranteed return. If you have student loans, any student loan rate below 5%, you know, just you can pay the minimum payment and just you should be investing your extra money. But anything above that, you should be trying to pay off. And so always pay off your high interest debt first. And then, you know, student loans obviously is a big topic now. If you have student loans, a lot of people are paying a higher interest rate than they need to. And there are easy ways you can go and get competitive offers to refinance or consolidate your student loan debt and significantly reduce the interest rate and or the payment that you have to make. So just being smart about how you're managing your debt and then making sure that you're tackling your first debt or your largest interest rate debt first is a savvy strategy. And then also not delaying investing. So I see this far too often that people have student loans and they just pay them off and that's what their focus is. You have to be investing while you're paying off your student loans because it's the investing ultimately that really is more important than paying off your student loans because that investing is the money that's going to compound and grow well into the future and give you significantly more options than just paying down your debt. So you should always be investing in addition to paying off your student loans.
Just to be clear here, if my interest rate for my student loan were greater than my expectations of a rate of return on my investments, you'd still recommend putting money in investments while doing a part at least to pay down those student loans?
Specifically in your tax advantaged accounts like your 401k. And so your 401k is a perfect example where if your employer matches your contribution, you should always be contributing enough to get that because it's basically like getting completely free money. And you should be doing that before you're paying off your student loans because that's free money that you're going to get that you wouldn't get otherwise. And then the tax advantages, because when you contribute to a Roth IRA or a 401k, it reduces your taxable income. And so the net benefit of that, even though your student loan interest rate is high, ends up being significantly greater because you've invested more money that can compound without having to pay tax up front. You only pay when you withdraw in the future. So you should definitely be investing in tax advantaged accounts like 401ks and IRAs in addition to paying off your student loan debt, even if your student loan debt is high, because the tax advantages and the free contributions statistically are worth it.
A viable path towards financial security, especially for millennials who are between the ages of 28 and 43. What about Gen Z coming up, who would be the ages between 12 and 27? Grant Sabatier is the creator of the financial advice website Millennial Money, podcaster and author of Financial Freedom, a proven path to all the money you will ever need. And there's still time for your questions and comments about how you were able to get ahead. Or your financial security or insecurity for that matter. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Money is infinite, but time is not. That kernel of wisdom comes from our guest website, millennialmoney.com. Grant Sabatier spent the hour talking about his experiences in finding his way to financial independence and helping build a path for the rest of us to find our way towards some sort of financial security. And we've still got time for you this morning at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tim in Wausau, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us your story.
I've got a question here for your guest, more of a question. I'm 60 years old. I've managed to sneak away a fair amount of money. And I'm also maxing out my 401k and with the catch-up amount over 55 and stuff. But I do not have any tax deductions whatsoever available to me to reduce my taxable income. And my question is, you know, strategies such as creating an LLC or something, what can a person like myself do to be able to take better advantage of the money that I do have and reduce my taxes?
Yeah, it's a great question. I appreciate it, Tim. Grant?
Yeah, it's a great question. So if you're making any money outside of your full-time job, then it can make sense to start an LLC. An LLC, you know, gives you a vast number of legal protections, but one of the most important things that it gives you access to is the ability to open what's known as a SEP IRA, which is an employment retirement plan for basically entrepreneurs and business owners. And so if you have a business on the side, you can sock away a fair amount of additional income in a SEP IRA, and that is a tax advantage account. So that reduces your taxable income as well. And so, you know, there are certain limits to that that you have to look up. It's about 25% you can sock away into that. And so it only makes sense to have an LLC if you have a side business. But this is one of the myriad advantages of having a side business, is that you can not only sock away more money, but because you have your side business, you can also take expense deductions for anything related to your side businesses. So if you have a home office, you can deduct a portion of that. If you're traveling for that business, you can deduct a portion of that. And coincidentally, you know, you have to keep good records, but just having a side business ends up helping you, you know, not only make more money, but also reduce your taxable income.
Nice. Where would I go to find the avenues for entrepreneurship and the opportunities to build on a growing industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I write a lot about this in my book, Financial Freedom, which, you know, going back to your, you know, thoughts on the FIRE movement, is entirely a playbook to reach financial independence. And so really the sum is greater than the parts, in that I focus on how to cut back, how to make more money, how to become an entrepreneur, how to find a side business idea, how to grow it, and then what to do with that additional money. And so it is a step-by-step plan. So I recommend checking out my book, Financial Freedom. It's now in 15 languages. It's been quite successful. And in addition to that, the important thing really I recommend is just starting with YouTube. And so that's really where I started. And it's funny because I was really part of the first generation. You know, I turned 40 this year, and I'm like 200 years in internet years, but I did get to take advantage of being really early on the YouTube train and learning a ton. And I still use YouTube a lot. And so it's a really underutilized resource. It's a growing resource, but certainly an underutilized resource for, you know, people over 40. Millennials kind of get it. Gen Z definitely gets it. But if you want to learn anything, that's a really great place to start. And there are just so many people sharing their blueprints for how they're making money. And you can literally go in and learn about the economics for how to launch any type of business. And so it's far more valuable in a lot of cases than going out and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on an MBA. I've never taken a business class. Everything I've learned about money and business, I've read in books from other people, listening to podcasts, and watching YouTube videos.
And you can too, seems to be the end of that too.
Yeah, it's all free. I mean, we live in such an incredible time where, I mean, the quality of life that we have access to, you know, Warren Buffett, Jeff Bezos, everyone says this, you know, the quality of life that even the average American has access to now is far superior than someone, you know, 100 years ago, John D. Rockefeller had. You know, we have all these advantages, all these creature comforts. And the same thing with information, just the availability, going to the library, you know, you can get my book out for free. You can just pour over just incredible resources. People who have been successful, you know, they're sharing how they're doing it. And that's incredible because, you know, the barrier to entry is pretty much nothing. As long as you're curious and you want to learn, the information is out there and people are taking advantage of it. And so there's really kind of no excuse to start. If you, are inspired to find additional ways to make money, it's really never been easier in history. And I think that's going to continue, you know, for quite some time.
Grant Sabatia, you said you're turning 40 or turned 40 or one on the older side of the millennial generation. You also have a young child now. And has parenthood changed your financial planning and the way you see your relationship with money?
Oh, absolutely.
How so?
I turned 40 in December of this year, so I'm almost there. I feel very grateful that I was financially independent before I had a child because it's very, children are expensive. Daycare is expensive. I'm seeing that cost, for me and my friends, you know, that's gone way up. And not only, the cost of raising a child, but just the time that it takes, you know, as well. And so it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of time. And so for me, that's really why I encourage people before you have kids, have a firm financial foundation. So you're not going to be stressed and that you can, take time off from your job or just have more flexibility. And, once again, I know I sound like an entrepreneur evangelist here, but once again, another benefit of being an entrepreneur is that you can, build your business around your life instead of, having to build your life around your business. And you can engineer in, I'm taking every, Tuesday off to take my daughter to school. I'm going to attend these sporting events. And so it's really cool because we live in a time now, especially, with remote work, mm-hmm. where we can spend more time with our kids. And, it's just been a pure joy. And I feel, very grateful that I do have the flexibility and the ability to spend time with her.
We've got about a minute left, but what about when your financial plan gets thrown a curveball, Grant? What do you do then?
Yeah, I mean, we know the only constant in life is change. Mm-hmm. And so, being adaptable, being able to pivot is always a lot easier when you have money in the bank. And so save now while the times are good, while things are going well, and then you'll be much more amenable and have many more options if life does throw you a curveball. If you don't have a lot of resources and life is throwing you a curveball, it's just a perfect time, ultimately to reflect on, am I in the career that I want to be in? Am I still enjoying my job? Unfortunately, most people don't like their full-time jobs, but, once again, there's so many opportunities available and most people spend, less time managing their money and managing their career than they do planning, for their annual vacation. And so if you just spend a little bit of effort on this sort of stuff, it really, really compounds and adds up over time and you can shift industries, you can shift jobs, you can learn new skills. It really is just an incredible time to be alive. And I encourage you to prepare for the increasingly uncertain future by investing, saving as much as you can.
Money is infinite, but time is not. Grant Sabatier, we thank you so much for your time this morning.
Yep, glad to be on here. Thank you.
Founder of MillennialMoney.com, the 2019 book Financial Freedom, A Proven Path to All the Money You Will Ever Need. Also, co-founder and CEO of BankBonus.com. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.